Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney, 13-0! What's up, brother?
We usually open with a goal when the U.S. women or men play, but there was 13 of them, and there were so many to choose from, so we didn't bother.
Well, I did bother.
Oh.
I guess the only... Once there's that many goals to choose from, ultimately the story becomes not like anything other than, okay, how many will they get? So right. Really the one you need is this one.
Put forward. Lloyd may get one here. Connie Lloyd, she's got it. 13-0 U.S.
13? It's so... So, by the way, thank you for downloading. We're going to talk about the U.S. women, of course. We're going to talk about the U.S. men. We've got a mailbag.
Thank you for listening to us.
For 5 years, memory of the week. Keep those coming. They're great, and they're fun for us to go back and relive and then send out to all you guys. But the U.S. women is where we start, JJ. And it's funny. So I send the rundown to you of like things that we're going to talk about the night before. Obviously, it's hard for me to know what we're going to be talking about with the U.S. women because they hadn't played yet. So I just put down some generic topics. First bullet point. Did you see anything that would present a cause for concern?
In like the first 3 minutes, they were taking too much out of the ball because they had so much of the ball. Occasionally, two players were arriving on the same pass because they were just so utterly, utterly dominant.
Wait, so you're actually answering that question seriously?
No, I stopped writing after the fourth minute. I was like, this is ridiculous.
I'm going to take a tact here that maybe people who are longtime listeners of this podcast wouldn't necessarily expect from me, because you've painted me as some sort of negative doom dweller that I just live in darkness. Here's what I'm going to say. I saw a lot of U.S. soccer Twitter today, and while everyone is obviously happy that the U.S. won their opener, I've seen a lot of, you know, almost, you know what? Yeah, anger. They should have backed off. It was wrong what they did.
Nick from Denver. I was watching the game with a few casual fans. And they were embarrassed. How would you have casual friends, JJ? This doesn't work.
Acquaintances. That's a thing.
Casual friends?
It's an acquaintance. Read, what does it say?
Sorry. Casual fans. And they were embarrassed / angry at our team's press for more goals. They saw it as bullying and classless. Personally, I felt very uncomfortable watching the game, yet I understand why they continued to score. How did you two feel as you watched the game?
I'm not even going to be that guy. Was it bullying? I don't know, maybe. Were the celebrations after like goals 9, 10, 11, and 12, were they necessary? No, certainly not. Was it fun as an American to watch them do that? For me, hell yes. U.S. soccer has just been in such a dark place since the men did not qualify. We've even been inventing reasons over the past couple years on why the U.S. women may be in certain trouble in this tournament. Maybe France should be the favorites. You know what? If they go out there and win their opener 13-0 and send this statement to the rest of the world that they are still top dog, fine by me. I feel bad that Thailand had to be on the receiving end of that, but I don't care. As an American fan, it was fun to watch. This team looks awesome. I don't know if they're going to go on and win this tournament. I have no idea.
France, we probably won't know until the third game.
You're right. France is great. You're right. We'll find out against Sweden a little bit in that third game. Sweden snuck by today with a late goal to win over Chile 1-0, but Sweden are a good team who have given the U.S. problems before. Ultimately, this game doesn't really mean anything in terms of what they're going to go on and do, but it served as a statement. You've got a lot of players who are clearly in good form right now. People are raising questions before the tournament. Oh, Alex Morgan, she's been in poor goal-scoring form. What's she going to be like in this tournament? How's five goals sound for Alex Morgan to get this tournament started? So for all the people that want to invent reasons on why they're actually angry by what they saw today, go enjoy that. Go be that guy. I'm going to be the guy over here who is thrilled and happy that this team just looks awesome right now.
From sea to shining
sea. Go
ahead.
Make fun of it. Make fun.
So here's where I'm at. I don't think you should be criticizing Mallory Pugh for rounding the goalkeeper and scoring her first goal in international, not in international football, but in World Cup football, her first tournament. And I'm loath to actually tell our US women how to celebrate, how to react, how to respond. I just thought the coordinated, almost coordinated celebrations that we saw, I think, after the Rapinoe goal. I can't even remember which goal it was.
It doesn't even matter.
Yeah, I was like, I was just maybe pull those back a little bit. But in terms of telling them not to score, to stop scoring, no, I don't agree with that. That's not how the game is played. And also, when you see a striker, like the relief that was on Alex Morgan's face when she hit number three. I don't care that she scored five. She was utterly relieved because tournament football has not been kind to her. Injured for the Olympics in 2016, 2015's World Cup, she only scored once. So she is like holding the mantle as the best player on this team for a long, long time, and she has to prove it in a tournament. So that's a weight off to get off to such a great start. So I totally understand why she's not going to stop at three. She's going to keep going. But here's the other side of things for me, and it's the flip side to your coin. When Rob Stone expresses even a little bit of sympathy, of human empathy, of understanding how the Thai players might feel, to be jumped upon by the panel, and I tweeted out that I said, God bless Rob Stone, I said, I really like his sentiment. It doesn't mean that he's right in what he's saying. He's just feeling sorry for another team.
Which is fair.
But all you got was, I'll tell you something, that's not how we operate here in America, right? Winning's what it's all about. You can't go out and tell them girls to stop scoring. You can't do that. What you talking about? You crazy? Like, that's not how it works. You can still say, you know what? They were professionals. They acted as professionals. They went out. They ran the score up. Could they have pulled back in the celebration a little bit? But I'm not going to question any of those things. And you can still say, I wish, just as a visual, that it would have stopped at 8-0. Because once it gets to 6 or 7 or 8, it doesn't matter if they score 5 more.
Right. I don't even want to hear about goal difference.
Oh, stop.
Once you win 4-0, goal difference pretty much no longer matters.
Come
You're good.
On. So, and you see Sweden eke by Chile.
Right. No, this was not about goal difference. I think, making a statement, enjoying themselves.
I don't want to be preached to by some guy with like a University of Kentucky basketball avatar, like, you know, with this all-winning, all-consuming mentality. You can watch that game. If a U.S. soccer fan had got up at 8-0 and went to make himself dinner and didn't watch the rest of the game, it doesn't make him less of a fan. All right. This was a cakewalk. It was a shellacking. It was an absolute battering.
Yeah.
And look, we're happy they won. It's off to a good start. I said specifically, I'm happy for Alex Morgan. I'm happy for Mallory Pugh scoring her World Cup goal. Glad to see Carly Lloyd come on and score. You can hold two views. It's possible to be sad for Thailand and yet not be a complete pushover and glad the US won.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's where I fall. And look, I mean, it's hard to even take anything from this game.
There's nothing to take. They're worse than any team in CONCACAF, almost.
Well, here's the thing. I think Thailand, because we're so accustomed to the men's game, and Thailand is just not a name that you see in men's football, you assume that they must be terrible. Their FIFA world ranking is actually not awful. What are they, 34?
34.
They were in the 2015 World Cup. They won a game in the 2015
sure.
World Cup. So, like, some people are looking at that score being like, you're going to beat up on this poor nation that barely even knows what soccer is. That is not necessarily 100% true for the women's game. Thailand know a little bit about the women's game. So, you know, it's not like they just beat up on Fiji or something like that. Having said that, I'm not stupid. I understand the gulf in class between the U.S. women and the Thailand women. And like I said, I'm sorry that they had to be on the receiving end of it, but I'm not sorry that we did that to somebody.
Sport isn't about sorry, but like I said again, just the reaction to even... Like, I tweeted out, this has stopped being fun, and you text me, and don't deny
no,
it.
No, I said,
This has become horrifying.
Yeah.
Those are natural human reactions from two sports fans to say, all right, okay.
Because it reached a point where, and I'm not even joking, like...
Every kick-out she hit.
JJ, I printed something, had to take it down the hall, faxed it. This is when the score was, I think it was 7.
It?
Yeah, I had to fax it to somebody.
And then did you take a message on your pager?
I sent a carrier pigeon to make sure that they received it. No, but I walked down the hall, faxed it, came back. It had gone from 7-0 to 9-0.
Yeah,
I didn't even do... I felt like I didn't do anything. Like, look, it reached a point of ridiculousness, but as a fan of the team doing the ridiculous things, I kind of liked it.
And it's worth noting that some of these games in the early rounds of the Women's World Cup have been of Italia 90 nature. Like, the Netherlands, who I gave the big up to, squeaked past the Kiwis this morning, 1-0. there's been a lot of dour football and not a huge amount of goals in certain games.
And look, teams who were highly thought of coming in, Australia, losing to Italy.
Right.
So, like, the U.S. have sat back, they've watched all this, and they want to make sure, no, not us. That's not happening to us. Not like the 2016 Olympics. We're going far in this tournament. And again, I know Thailand isn't the team to prove that against, but I think they're just trying to send a statement and make sure that everyone is in top form.
But if you look at Lavelle and Horan in the first 5 minutes of that game, those are the crucial moments. Because I watched Ireland labour against Gibraltar in the men's European Championship qualifying there the other day. And if you don't get a head of steam up against these teams, they become very, very entrenched and hard to break down. So it was brilliant to see Lavelle running straight at them, taking people on. Tobin Heath doing the same thing.
Oh my God, Tobin, the move that Tobin Heath had right. in the first half.
Well, now, and I'm convinced it don't matter what fullback you put out there, she's going to do that to them.
So,
you know, it is, you are caught between a rock and a hard place if you want to be compassionate. There is no compassion. You go out and win the game, and it's still okay to look at when the game is won and think, can you stop punching them in the mouth?
Here's the thing that I wonder about with regards to this game today. So how will the other great teams view this? Like, I just wonder, so let's say...
I don't think they'll take any heed of it. Really, I don't.
I don't.
They know
you're
how...
You're probably right, but there's part of me that, you know, like, in the men's game, like, England are a really good team. But when they go up against, you know, a Brazil, they'll change their style because it's Brazil. Like, I just wonder if...
But that's
going to
happen.
As good as Germany... might be, or as great, you know, France looks great too with what they did to South Korea on the opening day. But I just wonder if these teams will now see, because we all knew what the attack was going to be. We all knew how great this attack could be. And today we saw it in all its true power. You know, I wonder if some of these teams will look at that and say, maybe we need to be more of a defensive style against them.
You're going to see that very, very soon. Because let me tell you, from what me and you often have private conversations about South American football. And we think, who is this talking about it being the greatest football in the world? It can be. On its day, it can be the most breathtaking. It can also be dour and really negative. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a walloping dose of that from Chile. Now, will they be organized enough to stop the US? Very much doubt it. But there's another team coming down the tracks again who are going to bring the same thing. Sweden, Andrew, who so irked Hope Solo, who we'll get to later.
Yes.
But... Sweden, we know how they're going to play. That's not going to be free-flowing, total football.
The question is whether or not what you saw from the U.S. today convinces you that... Because Thailand put 10 women behind the ball basically early in this game.
Early, yeah.
And the U.S. scored 10 goals in the second half. Like, it didn't matter. The question is whether or not the U.S. will be able to do that against a more stout group of defenders. A more disciplined group of defenders
right.
than what you saw from Thailand
Better
today.
Better technical players as well on right. Sweden, etc. But look... This is the opening game. This is what it is. This is what the draw threw up, and the U.S. dispatched.
Some of the numbers on this, because they are... This was a game of historical significance today. The U.S.'s 13 goals are the most in any World Cup game. And by any, I truly mean any, men's or women's. It's also the largest margin of victory ever in a World Cup game. The U.S. men, by the way, have scored 13 goals over the course of the last 379 days and just 12 goals over their last three World Cup appearances total. The U.S. women scored more than that today alone. Some of the records that were set today, the 13 goals, like I said, most in any game ever. 13-goal win, largest margin of victory, men or women ever. It's the largest shutout in men's or women's World Cup history. Alex Morgan, her 5 goals are tied for the most in a game for men or women in World Cup history. On that note, Carly Lloyd had 6 goals at the last World Cup in 2015, which was tied for the most. Alex Morgan scored 5 today. It's insanity.
I mean, if she is, the pressure's on her now to score a few more to secure that golden boot.
Right. The 10 second half goals also were the most in a single half, obviously, in men's or women's World Cup history. It was a massacre. It could have been worse. Alex Morgan literally took a goal off the board for the U.S. when, who was it? Was it Lindsey Horan that would have scored on the header in the third or fourth minute, and Alex Morgan tapped it in from an offside position? She didn't need to. It was going in. None of it mattered. I had on here the standout stars for the U.S. I guess I would start with Alex Morgan just because when you score 5 goals, and a lot of them were just beautiful, like really well taken.
I thought that volley in the second half was a brilliant, brilliant goal.
But in terms of players who, you know, like Alex Morgan, even with these concerns, these manufactured maybe concerns that people had coming in, you know what she's going to be. But I will say it was good to see that from a player like Rose Lavelle, who was excellent. Moving forward, some of these players who were not sure quite yet how great they could be, it was good to see them start this way because, they're going to have to continue playing at that kind of rate to defeat a team like France, which could very well happen now in the quarterfinal stage. JJ, you mentioned Hope Solo before. She made some comments earlier in the week. She's working for the BBC during this World Cup.
Yes.
She made some comments about her former coach, Jill Ellis.
The current coach of the U.S. Women's National Team.
Right. Here are those comments from Hope Solo.
Jill, she's not the leader I wish her to be. She relies heavily on her assistant coaches. She cracks under the pressure quite a bit. But oftentimes it doesn't matter because the quality of the players on the U.S. team is superb. And, credit to Jill.
They're winning things in spite of her? Or?
We do. We have a tendency. We have a rich history of winning. We have a winning tradition. And it doesn't matter oftentimes who is coaching us because we'll find a way to win. And that is rich in our history of the game. There's the United States, they know how to win, and they know how to find a way to win in spite of who the coach is.
That's really strong. I mean, this is a World Cup winning coach. Now, there was two other panelists, including Pat Nevin, who I regularly talk about on this podcast there. None of them challenged her as to,
Can you give us an example of when she...
She cracked under pressure, they didn't ask that. And I'd love to know that myself. If you want to say, they don't win every game or every tournament, I mean, okay. Yeah. She's a World Cup winning coach. The Hope Solo went on then to say, she really honed in on watching tape, that Jill Ellis would not let them watch tape of their mistakes. And Solo found this to be unacceptable, that a coach would not be able to show mistakes to players. And she talked about massaging egos of players. Now, there was no ego or no person as senior as Hope Solo outside of Carly Lloyd, Abby Wambach in those years. So whose egos, if not Hope's herself, were being massaged? Was she upset she didn't get enough massaging? Is she still upset about the fact that maybe Ellis didn't come to her rescue or to her defence when she was issued with the cancellation of her contract with USA?
I wonder how much of it is based around that. Because remember, Hope Solo, for all her flaws and for all the things that she may say or do that have bothered U.S. soccer fans over the years, she is a legend of
the
sport in this country. And remember, she did not retire from U.S. soccer. She was essentially fired. She was essentially kicked off the team, banned.
Her contracts with both her club, with U.S. soccer, were terminated.
Right. And, you can debate whether or not that was warranted. I always felt like it was truly a situation of the punishment not fitting the crime.
Correct.
She was banned basically for saying that Sweden played like cowards against the U.S. Is that a classless comment? I don't know. Maybe. Is it worthy of essentially losing your job over? No.
But absolutely not. And I mean, U.S. soccer kind of intimated that it was cumulative reasons, that this was a collection of things.
So here's my thing with Hope Solo when she then makes a comment like this, and I think you just hit on it. There's something there between her and Jill Ellis. Which probably dates back to all of this that went down when she was kicked off the team. I was talking about this the other night. If in a few years, to think of something pertinent to the NBA right now, if in a few years you see Magic Johnson doing TV work and the Lakers are relevant and Rob Pelinka is still their GM and Magic Johnson goes on television and tears into him, you'll say, a few years ago, Rob Pelinka did some nasty things to Magic Johnson that caused him to basically quit his job over, and there's bad blood there. When Hope Solo says this about Jill Ellis, it doesn't really resonate with me because I feel like there's bad blood there. There's negative feelings there. So I just kind of hear it and I sort of just roll my eyes at it. Maybe that's unfair. Maybe a lot of what she's saying has value and maybe a lot of it is true. I'm not in those training sessions to know necessarily, but unfortunately, because it's her saying it, I just don't really give it the credence that I would if it was someone else.
I agree, and she has been in the past an outspoken character. There's a lot she says about including what she said in her run for US president, soccer president, federation president, that I agreed with. And she is a shining example of coming out of an era when the women's game was sorely neglected and to become the best and in many ways to revolutionize the goalkeeping position in the women's game. But there's so much bitterness, and rightly so, I would say, from the way she was ejected and pretty much lost the thing she loved. I mean, it's conceivable, very conceivable, that she could still be number one goalkeeper had she been allowed to continue playing.
Maybe.
I don't see why not. Yeah. And we know goalkeepers age at a different rate. I hated hearing it, though. It sounded just... I mean, this is a World Cup winning coach you're talking about. I mean, it's like me saying about Sir Alf Ramsey for the England World Cup winning coach. Oh, yeah, but he had Bobby Moore. He had brilliant players. Or Pep Guardiola. Pep had Raheem Sterling.
Guess what all great managers have in common?
Great players.
So, like, yes.
It's not really an argument.
Has Jill Ellis been bailed out before by the players on her team? Yeah, I'm sure she has. Just like every single one of the managers you just mentioned. They're all bailed out by their great players.
Hope always sounds like she's on the edge of tears when she when she speaks. We've had her on the podcast before. She was our first guest on the podcast.
No, that can't be true.
She was our first guest on this very podcast.
That's not true.
Yeah, prior to the Men's World Cup in 2014.
I really don't think you're right.
I am right. And she was very kind and very nice to us. I'd love to have her back on again.
Yeah.
Like, trash all these issues out. You think she'd come on with us?
Yeah. Why not?
I think she'd have...
I'm usually the one that thinks nothing of us. Now it's you. The tables have turned.
I'm going to reach out.
Okay. I'd love to speak with her. So that's our look at the U.S. women and their 13-0 destruction of Thailand. We will... they play again on Sunday against Chile. And so we will have a podcast probably on Monday, I would imagine, out for you to look back on that one. It'll be interesting to see if what happened today has any bearing on what happens moving forward. Who knows? Oh, and now we move from the good to the bad. Oh, our men. JJ, our men.
I've come up with a title for this segment. Will you indulge me?
Sure.
It's called Walking on Greg Shells. We're in a delicate moment with the U.S. men's national team. His name is Greg Berhalter, walking on Greg Shells.
Yeah, we sure are. JJ, Doug McIntyre tweeted this after the Venezuela game. He says, besides the qualifying disaster in Trinidad 2 years ago, I'm trying to think of a worse performance for the USMNT than today's 3-0 embarrassment at home to Venezuela. Still can't come up with one.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
I'm sure there have been.
Oh, my God.
It feels a little bit prisoner of the moment, but it does speak to the fact that this was not just some loss.
Honduras away, the 1-1, dreadful. Costa Rica away, the 4-1, 4-0, dreadful. We lost, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, 2-0 away to Guatemala in the dying days of Yergi Cakes.
It's true.
So... they were way worse than what was served up in Cincinnati, as horrifying as that was.
But it speaks to the fact that this was really, really bad. It was really bad for a number of reasons. We can get into the specifics. I'm sure we will. But the overarching conversation right now that American soccer fans are really having a hard time with, because I've seen both sides of it, and there's not a lot of give from the more militant side, which is panic. The sky is falling. This guy was the wrong choice. Yep. Why was Tata Martino good enough for Mexico but not for us?
He's playing out from the back.
They're like that side of this right now is they're emotional. I understand it because it's been a very emotional couple years, and we're waiting for the sun to start shining on this team again. But like, as bad as it was, and as much as I'm willing to acknowledge that there are problems here, which could very well carry over into the Gold Cup, which will also be bad and will also be a problem. I'm not ready to. I'm just not at that level, JJ. With where some people are, like.
But you're 6 months in. How could you be?
Thank you. Like all these people, these are the same people, JJ, who 6 months ago were saying how deeply flawed U.S. soccer was, how like there's institutional changes that have to be made, that this is not just like a player like sub this guy in for like there's real deep-rooted problems. Wait, you all thought that was going to get fixed in 6 months? There's problems here, everybody, And, like, you saw it a little bit against Jamaica. You certainly saw it against Venezuela. Like, these were bad performances. Did you think that this would have been cured overnight? Like, Greg Berhalter has not really had much time to work with this team. He doesn't really even know what his first team is yet. He's still kind of figuring this out on the fly. I know you don't want to hear that because we're on the eve of a major tournament.
But it's so reactionary. These are the same people who, when Aaron Long did okay in January camps, did well in January camp games and in recent friendlies against nations who were sending out mid-season half their teams, not their full teams, half their teams against us. So when Aaron Long did well, these are the same people tweeting, Long looks like he's cementing down one of the centre-back positions. And then he comes up against a seasoned championship / Premier League footballer in Solomon Rondon and gets bullied round the yard. And then they're back, ah, the sky is falling, it's all wrong. This is going to take a lot longer than 6 months to put right and to put a stamp on, to put Greg Berhalter's stamp on this team.
He's trying to change the whole system. Like, this is not a team that had personnel under Bruce Arena or Jurgen Klinsmann that we believed was talented enough to play out from the back the way that they do. That's not an easy thing to just suddenly get these guys to do. It's going to look bad while they're learning how to do it. Zach Steffen, the first goal against Venezuela. Until Zach Steffen really learns what he is and isn't capable of doing, and when it comes to playing out from the back, those moments are going to happen. That's what friendlies are for.
Now, I will get to the technicalities and the breakdown on that goal a little later, and we're going to talk a bit about what I think Berhalter needs to address. And sure, there are things that need to be addressed, but like I am preaching patience right here because it's January when he had camp. It's now June. By the way, I'm of the view that Gold Cup for I know people want the end of experimentation, the end of finding out what this team is, but I think large parts of the Gold Cup are going to be that as well, and people better buckle up because
you're 100% right.
It's not going to be the idea that it'll be solved going into this tournament, and that the idea that we shouldn't use this tournament as a way of finding out where we're at, or not even finding out where we are, finding out the system that works for us, is crazy to me. Of course it is. It's got to be that. It just has to be. We're 6 months in. The yearning for competitive football does have a lot to do with these reactions.
Totally.
Our first competitive game will be in Gold Cup since that night. So that has people on edge. Also, Venezuela, who've never qualified for a World Cup, we still have a little bit of a American soccer exceptionalism about us. When they rolled into town, we were expected to give them a game. And 3-0 down at halftime was a quick reality check. Those are shocks. They're not reasons to panic.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Venezuela. Solomon Rondon, he was just my signing of the season winner for this past year in our EPL Devonlings. Like, Pulisic didn't play in this game. So Solomon Rondon, the best player on the field, is playing for Venezuela in this game. Like, that's not a bad team. So you're right. Like, I think while people can talk about the humbleness, there's still a lot of people that need a little bit of that.
Now, can we actually talk about something that, you know, let's be fair. We're saying Berhalter needs time. But let's also criticize where criticism is due. And I think me and you are of a like mind on this. Josh Sargent, your thoughts?
I think this was not handled properly. I understand Berhalter's thinking in that Sargent can be, it's possible to be of a level just because he's qualified to play for the under-20s in terms of his age. He could be beyond that, but not quite at the level that Berhalter wants him for the upcoming Gold Cup. That's his thinking. You can make an argument for that to be the case. I'm not the manager. If I were, it wouldn't have been my thinking. Like, he's got to be on one of those two teams.
Yeah.
He just needs to be playing competitive soccer this summer for one of these teams. Like, he's got to be ingratiated in the system. Like, more U.S. training sessions with these players. Develop the chemistry at either one of the levels, under-20s or the
senior
team.
But the idea that he could be called in, that they could botch this so badly, the idea that he could be in the provisional Gold Cup squad, play 90 minutes against Jamaica and then sent away is a scandal to me. It's an absolute scandal. And it's a breakdown of a system, of a plan. Like, I'm sure they were thinking about splitting Weah and Sargent, one for each team. There was nothing in the Jamaica game There was nothing in... He's not regularly starting for Werder Bremen. They're already saying that he's not... Like, it's a month ago since they said... I think they said at the start of May, he's not going out on loan next season. He's ahead of our expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that... Also, one of the false narratives that was brought up was, well, Zardes and Altidore are ahead of him. Okay. They're ahead of him in seniority. I'm not saying drop either of them. It doesn't mean you can't bring Josh Sargent either. Yeah. It doesn't mean you can't slot him into this team. Why, like Jonathan Lewis, what? Why do you have to bring him?
Well, the thinking was from Berhalter, I don't know if you saw, but when Sebastian Legette got hurt, it now meant that Berhalter needed to make up for that loss of a midfielder on the wing who can play in that position. So it changed his thinking as to who would go, and Sargent was the odd man.
I think he could have worked something on the fly there.
I think so too. And by the way, I'll tell you, the luckiest man on earth right now is Berhalter, that Josh Sargent didn't score that goal against Jamaica late on. Because what would he have done then? Like, if Sargent comes to the rescue and salvages what was a horrible game for the U.S. by scoring that goal, like, can Berhalter still not bring him? What are people saying then? Probably a sigh of relief for him. He might have known at that point, I'm not going to take this guy.
I just think ultimately it's wrong that he wasn't playing a full tournament for the U-20s or he wasn't involved in the Gold Cup team. I just really think that that's botched.
Now, the only thing, I actually have a bigger problem with him, between those two, I have a bigger problem with him not being on the senior team for the Gold Cup. I would have rather him been there, simply because, like, we know what he would do for the under-20s. So having him be there, I think it's more important that we're now leaving the under-20 World Cup for the U.S. with them having lost to Ecuador. We're leaving that tournament now having seen a lot of Sebastian Soto and thinking, I think there's a player there.
Okay.
If Josh Sargent is playing in that tournament, okay, great. Maybe the who knows? Maybe the U.S. beat Ecuador. Maybe they go further, and that's great. But like, it's also important that we now feel like we've identified another player whom we probably wouldn't have if Sargent had been playing. So I'm okay with that. I understand Berhalter wanting to get a look at other young players, but then he probably should be on the senior
but
team.
I think Soto and Sargent are such different players as well. They may play in advanced forward positions, but I keep saying this about Sargent. I like the way he can bring other players into the game. I like the way he can drift off. He doesn't have to be an out-and-out nine for me. I think he could play as a quasi-10. I think he can do lots of different things. And the fact that that Berhalter doesn't see what I see makes me wonder.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions right now. Here is some of what Berhalter has had to say in the time since. So I guess we'll go to his post-game comments from Venezuela. Jeff Carlisle, who's been pretty harsh, I would say, on Berhalter in the wake of these two friendlies, really pressed him on if this now is going to cause him to want to change the style. There's been a lot of talk, this pressing style, this playing out from the back style, possession-based style. Do they have the guys to do it? Jeff asked Berhalter about that.
I think we need to be calm. I think we need to look at the game, look at what we need to improve on, and then set out to do it. It's really tough, after a result like this to come in and start making excuses. So I don't really want to do that. But what I'd say is we're still getting guys where they need to be, and we're not there yet, and that's pretty clear. So we're going to keep working on it.
Can I address this straight off the bat? Okay, so two things have been bugging me. First of all, we watched England versus the Netherlands, and we saw Kyle Walker pick up the ball in the fullback position and attempt to play the ball into midfield on the edge of his box to Ross Barkley, the midfielder who comes short, right? He's played a hospital pass because he can see the defender behind him. He's got the whole field to see. And he plays a ball into Barkley, and Barkley's dispossessed by the onrushing Dutch midfielder. The ball ends up in the back of the net. That's not a failure of playing out from the back. That's a failure of decision-making, okay? Playing out from the back has become this trademark, this zombie phrase repeated online and on Twitter over and over by US soccer fans as the stick to beat Berhalter with. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that this team either has the personnel or is capable to do that every time. But when Zach Steffen made the mistake he made, he had men left and right. He should have opened his body and pinged that to the left-hand side. I think it was Tim Ream who'd gone square. Ream was not under the same press as it was. In the end, it was a terrible pass out anyway. That was a failure of technique and decision-making, not a failure of system. And it's also, it's not Moses coming down with the Ten Commandments. You must play out from the back. Playing out from the back is, it's a response, it's a way of playing, but it's a responsibility on the professional players on the field to know when it's on and know when it's not on. Jamie Carragher said the exact same thing after the England-Netherlands game. So when Berhalter talks about playing out from the back and, you know, guys aren't on the same page yet, I agree with them. I do agree with them. But I actually think we're missing something. We're missing, there was a two-pronged template that he came out with at when he took this job. It was Alexi Lalas that asked him. I think we've got the audio here. He told us the way he wanted to play. Just have a listen to this and then I'll talk about it afterwards.
This is from his introductory press conference.
His very first thing, Alexi Lalas presses him on how we're going to play.
Yeah, so the idea is that we're an attacking-based team that wants to create goal-scoring opportunities by disorganizing the opponent. You know, it will do that in a number of different ways. What I'd say is, you know, consistently over my time in Columbus, we've done it through build-up, right, where we start the ball with the goalie in the back. The teams try to press us. We play through them to create goal-scoring opportunities. We're making the field big. Another way to do that is to use pressure, whether we start in a mid-block or move into high pressure to force turnovers, win the ball, and immediately create goal-scoring opportunity. The idea is it's a fluid style that is the players are intent on breaking lines, playing through the opponent, and creating goal-scoring opportunities.
Sounds pretty good.
Right. The second part was the part that I was licking my lips at, was the pressure. I don't think we are, at this point in the development of US soccer players, in a position where we can play out from the back regularly, play between the lines and do those things. Will Trapp is not capable of doing it. I don't care what he did for Columbus. We don't have the midfielders. Now, maybe Tyler Adams can come in and do that. I don't know. But the second part is the part that Greg Berhalter and US soccer fans, but more worryingly Greg Berhalter, has forgotten about. Look at the way we see teams who do not play with like a Pirlo or some kind of brilliant passing mind in the middle of the park. They win their tackles. Look at the U20s. They press in key areas and you win the ball high up the field and you get it to your smart players, your skillful players. That's what we need to do. That's what we're not seeing. Christian Roldan, Will Trapp, Weston McKennie, Boyd, Areola, all those midfielders, including Giassi Zardes, they could be taught to do that very, very quickly. The patterns of play in playing the kind of game Berhalter wants takes time. So the passing out from the back takes lots of time. Time-wise, it's the difference between painting your kitchen and painting the Sistine Chapel. The only way we're going to get to that place where we want to be in the time frame US soccer fans are expecting is with a 1980s montage. Seriously.
Yeah.
But with the pressing system, you look at Maurizio Pochettino at Spurs, you look at Jurgen Klopp, dealing with much better players, I'll grant you. But the pressing, where we have a midfield and a forward line that high presses in certain areas and wins the ball back in attacks, that's something that can be done quickly.
So what is happening in the montage right now? I'm trying to envision. Right now, the start of the montage, things are bad. Like, right now we're seeing the clip of Stefan's bad pass. We're seeing the clip of Weston McKennie just shutting down on the off-the-post second goal for
Venezuela. Berhalter's running in, and he grabs McKennie by the lapels, and he points down the field to some squad player, and he goes, press!
Right.
And they run, and they squeeze, and they press, and they win the ball back. It goes into the net. McKennie turns around. He looks angry, and then a smile creases across his face with his thumbs up.
Right, then we cut to some intense training scene.
Weightlifting always.
Yeah, weightlifting's important. Some sort of, like, running between cones. Does this end with some kind of, like, us hoisting the World Cup trophy?
No, we're on the beach. We run on the beach, right? And we're running along, and attractive...
Like pulling, like, a tire.
We're pulling a tire, and attractive women walk by. Because it's the 1980s, one of the guys turns around, trips over, falls in the hole. Greg Berhalter puts his hands on his hips and goes, you guys... But basically...
Right, in this clip, Will Trapp has, like, a bowl cut.
And sunshade. My point being, guys, playing out of the back, the patterns it takes to do that takes hours. International players don't have that time. Greg Berhalter doesn't have that time. And I don't believe technically we've got the players to do it. What we can do in the time we're given is press. Create that mid press and that high press that we heard Berhalter talk about. And we're not doing it.
More bad news, unfortunately, today. Tyler Adams will not be a part of the Gold Cup squad. He has withdrawn because of a groin injury. It's believed that Reggie Cannon is now going to take his place on the team. So another one of these young players that we were hoping we would get a nice picture of what they're going to do for the U.S. in competitive tournaments. We will have to wait on that for Tyler Adams, at least. Look, ultimately, like I said, I'm not ready to freak out because I want to see more of Pulisic. And quite frankly, I'm not ready to freak out just because I didn't really think that we were looking at the finished article. Granted, it was really bad. It was very ugly. Now, Greg Berhalter does do a nice job of painting a little bit of a rosier picture than what some soccer fans maybe want to hear. Here he is on the Venezuela beating.
So let's talk about it. I mean, the first goal, right, isn't a regular goal. Is it? It's not.
It's irregular.
Yeah, it's an irregular goal. He's offsides. The third goal's offsides. And I don't think we responded well from it. But when we talk about the first half in particular, like especially the beginning phase of this game, what did we say? We talked about wanting to be more aggressive, wanting to get behind them, wanting to get balls into their penalty box. And I think to a certain extent we did that really well. Really well. And you know, we gave up the goals. I didn't love the response. And then the second thing would be, I don't feel like for 90 minutes we competed on the level that we needed to compete on. I think it was the mentality. And, you know, I'm understanding that, you know, it's hot. I'm understanding that guys, you know, some have been playing 90 minutes every week for the last month. Some have been on vacation and we're getting everyone to where they need to be. But you still want, you want more competitiveness, I think. And it starts with putting guys in good positions to be able to make tackles and to go in on duels.
I'll be honest, after hearing that, he's right. Two of the goals for Venezuela were offside. We probably should have scored if not for an amazing save in like the 80th minute. So as far as I'm concerned, that was a 1-1 draw. Feel better?
You're giving us a goal.
Feel better, everyone?
I hope I was clear on what I was saying.
You were. It was very good. I'm surprised, quite frankly.
It's possible for us to be really good, but not in the way that Berhalter thinks we can be.
Here's the discouraging thing, and then we'll move on. We'll take a quick break after this because there's a lot more to get to. But I guess for me, the thing that's discouraging, it's a little bit of what Berhalter said at the end there, a bit of a mentality issue. Like, I don't want to see Weston McKennie shutting down the way that he did on the second goal.
Do you
like
think
that,
Weston,
you know, I don't.
Here's a better question. Do you think Weston McKennie, Roldan, or any of those guys looked like they knew what they were doing in the field? Like, they played through the midfield so easily.
Venezuela were so much better. That's discouraging. The fact that, you know, Greg Berhalter, in what we played there from his initial press conference, he's talking, every sentence he utters ends with, to create goal-scoring opportunities, which is a thing that we're not doing at all. I mean, in Jamaica, you could count on one finger, I think, pretty much, the goal-scoring opportunities. Pretty much the same thing with the Venezuela game. You know, in Chile, yeah, we got the 1-1 draw. Pulisic scored in the fourth minute, but that was, like, not a whole lot happened after that. So, you know, there's not much happening in terms of goal-scoring opportunities being created. And ultimately, you know, Yedlin not playing, Brooks not playing, Tyler Adams now not playing. This Gold Cup, we're still not necessarily going to come out of this tournament knowing where we're at, which is a little bit unfortunate. Ultimately, this Gold Cup, I don't have a great feeling about right now. I think this is still a time for experimentation. People are going to freak out. I know that's coming, but everyone has to keep their eye on what the real prize is. It's about World Cup qualifying. It's about making sure we're getting into that next tournament, and it's about having some sort of system more set and in place by the time Qatar 2022 rolls around, because that's really what this is about. It's not about the 2019 Gold Cup. As much as we would like to do well and perform and get to the final and maybe even win it, that's not what this Berhalter experiment is about right now. It just isn't.
I'm still very confident. He laid out a plan in January or when he was appointed. If he focuses on the parts that we can do well and execute on, we will be okay. But yeah, discouraging so far.
We'll go ahead, take a quick break here. We've got a little bit of some European news to get to on the other side, a nice mailbag, a little what to watch for, and a 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week, which should be fun as well. They always are. Don't go anywhere. back now. JJ, the U.S. women just scored again. It's 14-0. This is unbelievable. And they're celebrating. Look at them celebrate.
Poor Thailand.
Oh, man. They're just letting them have it.
By the way, Norway ran up 12 against Honduras in the U-20 World Cup. We should remember that, too.
It was wrong.
One player scored 9. I think he should have been banned from the game and never to play again.
People just, like, I don't know.
The problem is...
People like being angry.
They like being polarized. They can't say, you know what, yeah, great win, but... God, I was feeling bad for Thailand for a while. No, you gotta feel good for America.
Who is this? I need to know. You know a lot of, like, you've lived here for a long time, all right? You know a lot of Americans. You're friends with a lot of Americans. Who is this person that you're impersonating? You've never met this person. You have this creation in your head of the ugly American.
No, it's a funny caricature.
Well, until I meet this person, this whatever it is that you do there, I find it hurtful. As an American myself, I feel like you're impersonating me.
No, you are
family.
Not. You're not like that at all. If I was doing an impression of you, it would be totally different.
I've heard your impressions of me. Oh.
Sorry, was that an impression or were you just cold?
Let's see, a couple things, JJ. Portugal win the inaugural UEFA Nations League.
And we deem it a successful tournament. By the way, the real story of... That was actually a kind of a good game, in a way. But what was interesting was the unusual cruelty that Nations League put England and Switzerland through. Like, extra time and penalties. Why would you not just play penalties straight after 90 minutes?
I'll be honest. When it hit me that there was a third place game for this tournament, I laughed for a solid 14
minutes. Let them go on holiday.
I couldn't believe it. There was a third place. I saw Gary Lineker tweet after England lost. Because he didn't. It seemed like he didn't know. He said, wait a minute, there's a third place game on Sunday?
Those English fans.
And I laughed and laughed.
A lot of those English fans were out there for like 5 days. It's like a tournament. Like a proper tournament.
If you're going to call it that, like Portugal have won 2 of the last 3 major European or / world tournaments.
I was talking to a friend of mine today and we were just discussing... And that's not to say it's not a good Portuguese team now. They've got players like Bernardo Silva. They've got good players outside of Ronaldo. But think of how good the team Ronaldo was in when he came in as a 17, 18-year-old. He came into that golden generation.
Figo.
Rui Costa.
Yeah. But this is the team.
They won nothing.
And this team can't stop winning.
No. But they're doing it in the way that the team that beat them in 2004 did it. They're greasing their way to the finals, baby.
So congratulations to Portugal. The inaugural UEFA Nations League winners. JJ, Eden Hazard, it has finally happened. He is officially a member of Real Madrid.
Why have you put this on the rundown?
What do you mean?
It's not news. If you had some insight into where Matthijs de Ligt was going, that would be more interesting.
I don't know what to say.
Do you think this is seismic news of some sort? We knew.
But it happened.
We've known for days.
Well, first of all, we talk about transfer rumors all the time. You don't know anything until it's done.
Right.
He now plays for Real Madrid. That's interesting.
It is.
This is a massive hole that Chelsea are going to have to somehow fill. That transfer ban is still in effect, and I can't wait to see what this means for Real Madrid. Because what I was seeing was Christian Eriksen going public and saying, hey guys at Real Madrid, come get me. I'm ready now.
Maybe it's time for a change.
And then I see them go make the Eden Hazard signing official. And then I see Real Madrid today, there was a report in Marca that they have no interest in Christian Eriksen. So now what does he do? He has to come back to Tottenham with his tail between his legs. The image to me is, it's like hilarious.
It would have been a terrible move. Where would he even fit into that Real Madrid team now if Hazard's there?
Right, yeah. That signing, I think, has a ripple effect that was really important for Spurs. It's like a nice double whammy if you're Tottenham, because it means now you probably keep Eriksen, and one of your biggest rivals just lost their best player.
They went to Copenhagen, Real Madrid's officials, to watch Ireland play Denmark in the European Championship qualifier, and they just saw Eriksen, just the football kicked out of him by Ireland, and they were like, this guy is a broken man.
It was a good draw for Ireland.
Great draw, yep. So we're top of our group at 10 points from 12.
That's
nice.
Very good, yeah. Let's see, JJ, you have a mailbag.
Mailbeasy. @CO Soccer Pod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com, and caughtoffsideespn on Instagram. Follow us everywhere because we're really good at podcasts, not so good at the social media.
We've really made it easy for people that we've got 3 different ways to reach us, all with completely different account names.
Because we're bad at this, okay? Tim Koppel, not Ted, Tim Koppel. Hi, guys. I just wanted to let you know you have created a monster in my son, and I love it. My 8-year-old son Landon and I listen to every episode together, and he lives and breathes soccer. With that being said, he was tasked with creating a poster, and this is what he came up with. He drew Paul Pogba and Diego Maradona meeting. Paul Pogba is asking Maradona, "Who are you?" And Diego Maradona's answer is, This made me laugh until I cried, and I figured you might enjoy this as well. Have a good one, boys. Let me show you the picture of Pogba and Diego Maradona.
There's a speech bubble that says, "La." That's fantastic.
Yeah. And he's even put Maradona in an Argentinian jersey.
You should really tweet that picture.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Tim if that's okay, and we will tweet it out there for everyone. Good likeness of Pogba as well. The hair and everything. Martin Mulcahy. What the hell? The U.S. men's national team was routed by Venezuela 3-0 in Cincinnati. I thought Venezuela is a failing socialist nation. Can't America force them to give us 1.5 goals so we can compete on a level playing field? Not sure that's how socialism works there, Marty. If we're going to lose, I want to get something out of it and have the kids like Soto, Sargent and Weah get valuable experience ahead of World Cup qualifying. Let fans get attached to these guys. They are more likely to play finishing roles in the box at crucial qualifying games than their MLS counterparts, since they will be hardened by better defences come 2021. Well, they'll get their chance, but it's not going to be at this Gold Cup. Will Steed. Hey guys, been a fan of the pod for a while.
Actually, can I cut in for one sec? Just sure. Going off of that last one. Martin?
Yeah.
He's right. Like, Josh Sargent, Soto, those guys are the future.
Sure.
But people need to know this. Like we've talked about repeatedly, we can no longer take qualifying for granted.
Nope.
So when World Cup qualifying starts, you're not going to see, like, it's still going to be Jozy Altidore. Now, he may not, wherever we're at in 2022 when the World Cup rolls around, who knows who will actually make that squad.
It's important that we fail in the same way we failed before with the same members.
I'm just saying, like, there's no time for experimentation anymore in CONCACAF qualifying.
That's right now.
Right, that's for friendlies, and I would say that's even for this Gold Cup. Once qualifying starts, still expect to see some of these names that maybe you don't think or expect to see in 2022.
Will Steed. Hey guys, been a fan of the pod for a while and just wanted to say love the work you guys do. It really helped my American brain. Congratulations, JJ, another European trophy. Thank you. Anyway, I heard a discussion on the Bleacher
Report. He didn't even write that. You were just like looking for reasons to shoehorn that into
there
every
podcast. There it is. I'm pointing at it now.
I don't even see it there.
Clown. I heard a discussion on the Bleacher Report Football Ranks podcast that brought up the idea that if given the opportunity, would Liverpool and Man City switch the Premier League and Champions League trophies? Obviously, it is purely hypothetical, obviously. But I was interested to know what you guys thought. Anyways, keep up the great work. Thank you. Will, if it was in the middle of the season and someone said you could have the Premier League and swap the trophy out, you'd probably say, maybe, yeah, okay.
100% yes. Yeah, both teams definitely would have taken that.
But not now. Not after. I wouldn't give up like what happened in the semi-final second leg against Barcelona for anything. No way. Bryce Nelson. Hey guys, I've been a listener for about a year now, and I'm interested in going back and listening to old pods from 14 to 16. Would love to hear English Spursy Andy talk about England's shock defeat to Iceland. That was a great podcast. For example, iTunes and a few online websites only go back to August 2017, while the ESPN app only reaches March 2019. Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
God. Wondering if there's a full archive anywhere. Keep up the great work. There should be one on ESPN New York, right?
Is there?
I think there is.
I doubt it because they take from... I think they just take from what's on... I'll look right now.
On Pod Center.
Look, we have them all saved.
So
here.
We should play...
What are we going to email it to him?
No, we'll play it as a... Bryce, go leave an iTunes review and ask for the Iceland shock defeat.
So
that was a good podcast.
When I go to ESPNNewYork.com, if I scroll down as far as I can go, the last one is from August 29th, 2017.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Yeah, so... lots of podcasts have just been lost to history.
Well, we have them. So
we have MP3s on the computer here.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll talk to somebody and see.
Yeah.
He's not the He's not the first person, actually, that has asked about going back to listen to like a podcast from a certain incident.
So many people have come to us late in the day, kind of. And which is great, but I feel like they've missed out on some stuff.
I would love to go back and listen to some of our
early ones. Our early
stuff
was
ridiculous.
Oh, terrible. Oh, my God. Greg Hapke. I'm writing to you both for the first time thinking, wow, I can't believe this is my first correspondence with the pod since I started listening 2 years ago. But it's true. I love the podcast. The banter, hashtag banter, between you two and the in-depth analysis of the game I have learned to love over the past 7 years. You make my days processing taxes for a Midwestern State Department of Revenue a lot more fun. Wow. I feel like that's an Office Space thing. Yeah, I'm going to need you to stay behind and... I write to you today, especially JJ, about the man, the myth, the legend, Jurgen Klopp. I'm a Manchester United fan. Have been since the very first English domestic match I have ever watched way back in 2012. I've learned to root against Liverpool, but I can't help but love the manager. I can't help but root for him as a man, even if I hate the club he manages. I found two videos on YouTube about Klopp that I thought I would share. The first about Klopp's Christianity. I am a seminary grad from 2017 and a devoted man of God. Peace be with you. And the second is his top five goals scored as a player. JJ, the top two are volleys, so you're bound to love them. I have watched that. The volleys are pretty good for Klopp, who was not technically adept. But yeah, the Klopp's Christianity video is very interesting because up until he did an interview with Channel 4 recently, I didn't know he had any religious faith. And I thought he was an atheist. I thought he was just a regular guy who believes in...
All the teams I root for, I know very little about my coach's religious beliefs.
No, well, you know that Maurizio Pochettino believes that lemons soak in bad energy. I mean, he's one step away from a faith healer. But no, I found it very interesting, and he talks...
Is that a Glenn Hoddle reference?
Yep. That's not fair. So I watched the Klopp Christianity video, and he says that one of them, you know, he talks about Jesus Christ and how important he was in his view of the world. It's weird to hear him talk like that.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to tweet it out.
All right.
It's only like a minute and a half long, but it's worth having a look at because he really doesn't talk about it.
Yeah, why would he?
But
like,
no,
that's not a normal thing that would come up in press conferences.
No, but
like,
I
just said, I've never heard a coach talk about
But when he
that
talks
stuff.
About how they arrive at the ground early so as to, you know, look after the religious players on their team to make sure they have enough time to say their prayers, like Mo Salah, I just thought maybe a follow-on question was, well, what do you think of their belief in God? No one's ever asked him. Now we know.
I'm not surprised that that's not a thing that comes up regularly.
Probably these days it's fraught with issues.
I don't know.
It's tough to talk about religion these days.
I'm fine with it. Let's do a whole God and soccer podcast.
No, we can't do that because you ruined it. Because you made fun of a superstition my mother has.
Oh.
Yeah. You ruined religion for everyone.
That's quite a thing to put on me.
Beth Hammonds. Guess where Beth was? She was in Bermondsey. In London, outside Millwall's ground. Get the drop ready, Andrew. All I could think about being outside Millwall's ground was the Millwall drop.
Millwall.
Yep. She was doing a tour of grounds.
Nice.
She was going to all London grounds. What a great thing to do.
That is cool. Yep. And like literally touring them or just like getting a picture from outside?
I didn't ask that, but she has a picture from outside the den there. Does anyone really want to go into the den in the off season?
I bet it's cool. That's a good idea.
Josh from Memphis, Tennessee. Hey guys, still feeling down after the Spurs defeat, but have a very optimistic look for the upcoming season, and I hope you do as well, Andrew. Come on, you Spurs. Have a question about the MLS. I was looking at the MLS table and noticed Houston with 13 games played and Montreal with 18.
Oh, well, I mean, this is what we deal with.
I know y'all have touched on this in previous episodes. My question is if y'all have any suggestions to help improve this issue.
Oh, we talk about the hilarity of the unbalanced scheduling all the time. A way to improve it? I don't know. Just like be like the rest of the world. Why is it so hard for us, but everyone else, every other league on earth seems to find a way to navigate through international breaks or Champions Leagues? Like it just eight. You said that the disparity is 18 games for one and 13 for the other. That's crazy. How can that happen? I don't care who's playing CONCACAF Champions League games or whatever. Like, so then they just have to catch up with a midweek game like the next week. There can't be a disparity of five matches.
And it feeds into the view that it's just, you know, so early season. Don't even look at the table because they're not even playing the same amount of games.
Honestly, it's hard to judge where teams are at. It's kind of frustrating.
It's like baseball. They're five games back.
But at least in baseball, teams generally have played the same number of games. No. And they play 162. MLS can't get it right in this small number of games. It's crazy.
Josh finishes by saying, still amazes me ESPN haven't given y'all a primetime TV show yet. Josh, it is a shame. And Kate is great on Twitter. Finishes us off here. Would/should an MLS club want to try and sign Daniel Sturridge?
I would say yes and yes.
But the last line is telling. Not a knock on him at all, just asking. As if, I don't know, he was in New York meeting his agent, his business manager, just yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a risk. Like, I know Daniel Sturridge is still under 30 years old, and he is a proven Premier League talent. He could stay in the Premier League at a club like, you know, like West Ham or Crystal Palace or something, and I think still be a first-team player. But that's not to say that there isn't risk attached to him going to an MLS club. He'll be playing in much warmer conditions. He'll be playing, you know, the travel is more intense. He's somebody who, like, how will that affect a guy who is kind of an injury-prone player? You know, some guys have come over here from England and had no problem with it whatsoever. Other guys like Lampard, Gerrard, they haven't been quite as lucky. So, you know, if you make him a DP signing, there's risk attached to it. There's no question about it. But for some clubs out there in MLS, I'd say he's worth taking a chance on 100%.
Travel and hard ground. Those are the two things that would concern me.
Yeah.
And also just you need a coach who's going to be really receptive to managing minutes. Mm-hmm. But I think he has one big club left in him in Europe.
Well, that's the thing. If you're MLS, better to get him now than have him go to, like you say, that one other big club and then make the decision at 33 he wants to come to MLS. Then I think you're having a different conversation. But at 29, I would take a flyer. Sure.
Yep.
Is that it?
That's the mailbag.
There you go. Very nice. Quick what to watch for, JJ. Wednesday, 3 o'clock, France and Norway in probably one of the more marquee group stage matchups here at the Women's World Cup. France got off to a great start. The 4-0 win over South Korea that we referenced before, they look every bit as legit as we thought they might be. That was dominant. I texted you and I said, if South Korea registers a shot in this game, then they're the true winners. Now, it took a while. I think it took until the 70th minute, but they did. Ultimately, I think they wound up with two or three shots. I don't know that they had any on target, but this was... The scoreline is obviously different than the U.S. women that was 13-0, but if you're talking about dominance, it was similar, I would say, in how France handled that game.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was. And I suppose when you looked at them and you heard the crowd and the support behind them, you felt the momentum that could build behind this team, and they are still my favorites. Norway, still people talking about Ada Hegerberg not being involved, and the Fox panel internationally got into, I won't say hot water, but every soccer podcast I listened to, it was Alexi Lalas's voice and his comments pleading with Ada Hegerberg to explain exactly her reasons for not being involved in this squad, although I think she's done that several times.
We played audio of her explaining it from the Olympic podcast. Thursday, 12 o'clock, Australia and Brazil in what has suddenly become a really big game for Australia, who people thought very highly of before this tournament. Sam Kerr is one of the best players in the world.
But they got caught out cold by Italy.
A late goal from the Italians to win it 2-1.
Defensively, they did not look great, Australia. And it was an error for one of the goals, but still.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Brazil taking all 3 points from their first game, a 3-0 win over Jamaica, thanks to Cristiane and her hat trick. So making up for the absence of Marta,
who could be out for the entire tournament. Yeah. We don't know yet.
And then we'll move ahead, JJ. Sunday at noon, the U.S. back in action. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there who will be celebrating by setting up in front of their TVs to watch this one, which is really... My wife was asking me, so what do you want to do on Father's Day? I mean, obviously, I want to hang out, you know, maybe go to, like, a beach or something with my wife and Jack. But this is... Honestly, this is what I want to do. Like, if I am allowed to do anything, truly, I kind of just want to sit on the couch and watch that game. That's okay, right? I feel like on that day you should be allowed to. That's, if that's what I want to do, then that's what I get to do.
And also, people need to realize you're a sports fan, a simple man. Sofa with some nice guacamole and chips would be perfect for you. Maybe even a beer.
Yeah, actually.
Push the boat out.
Sounds pretty good. Copa America begins on Friday.
Unbelievable. It's every year now.
It begins on Friday, 8:30, Brazil and Bolivia. No Neymar. In addition to a lot of what we spoke about on last week's podcast with everything happening for him off the field, he has now suffered a major problem on it. Suffered ligament damage to his ankle.
Now, they think he'll be back for the start of the season. He will miss Copa America, but he will be back to train with PSG. But train is all he'll do, as he'll be serving suspensions at the start of the season. So
yeah. So Brazil get it underway Friday, 8:30. Saturday, a really nice one at 6 o'clock. Argentina and Colombia, which should be a fun one. Gold Cup, JJ, and so it begins. Saturday, 7:30, Canada and Martinique.
Martinique, the team that people seem to forget about how bad we were in 2017 in this Gold Cup. We're talking about performances. We were 0-0 at halftime against Martinique. Mm-hmm. So
there's going to be some rough waters ahead.
There are.
And Saturday, late, 10 o'clock at night, Mexico and Cuba. You know, it's interesting.
We're fancy the Mexicans in that one.
Well, yeah, so do I. But we're so hyper-focused on the U.S. because this, you know, that's one of the primary things that we talk about here. I wonder what they're talking about on, like, Mexican football podcasts, because I would imagine that there's a lot of concern there as well for different reasons. Mexico are the favorite for this tournament, and they rightfully should be. But who's playing? Like, you have all these marquee Mexican players who have chosen not to go. Now, Irving Lozano, through injury, will not be a part of the Mexican team. Now, they're deep, so, like, you still feel good about them, but they enter this tournament in a bit of a strange place, too. This is a weird Gold Cup, isn't it?
It's very, very strange. There are so many teams in stages of transition. But again, the Mexicans are going to look at this and think, this has opened up for us.
Yeah.
Especially with the U.S. problems.
Somebody tweeted at us the other day how, like, you know, we talk about how the football is going on forever and ever. And it's so true. I'm watching as much now as ever.
It's hard to keep up with it all, to be perfectly honest with you.
So that is pretty much the show for today. But before we get out, like we said, we do have another 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week. Would you like to set this one up?
Yes, it's from PaulStan02. My favorite memory was in one of the episodes during the World Cup when JJ screamed at a listener that was complaining about Costa Rica and Panama being there ahead instead of the US. I 100% agreed with him, but it also made me laugh out loud. Yeah, it's just me being aggressive.
Yeah, here is that moment in our 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week.
Here's your 5 stars for 5 years memory of the week on Caught Offside.
My red card goes to U.S. soccer fans and their sour grapes over Panama and Costa Rica. So I asked on our Twitter, at CO Soccer Pod, just for fun, if there was one team you could get rid of right now from the World Cup, who would it be? And I got this response, which isn't the only tweet of this general theme that we've had this last 2 weeks. I'm not going to name the person because I don't want to ruin them. But this is the two tweets they sent me combined. Costa Rica, they shouldn't be allowed to play their third game after their two abject performances. Painful to see the US men's national team out heavily because we couldn't win a point against them. Then see them show up like this. Let me be clear. The U.S. does not deserve to be here. Well, you're not being clear. But to see Costa Rica be there in their place and potentially put up a donut in the group stage sucks. This is hardly a group of death. Mind you, Serbia and Brazil in it, but not, and Switzerland, but not a group of death. And also as well, can I just say before I get into the real meat of this, Costa Rica conceded 2 goals against Brazil after the 90th minute. Okay. Did they or did they not draw their last game? All right. This is for everyone in the back. All you US soccer fans.
Oh, here we go.
The US didn't qualify. Panama qualified. Costa Rica qualified. We didn't qualify. They didn't take our place. It wasn't our place. Because we didn't qualify. That's the answer!
want it. I hate to see them. I'm taking our place. It's not our place.
This has been your Five Stars for 5 Years Memory of the Week.
It's just classless shouting.
I think you were being a little bit of Captain Literal Man in that.
No.
I don't think he meant that, like, the U.S.
His words,
in their spot.
His words.
I think he just meant, like, CONCACAF gets a certain number of teams in.
Yeah, and
we're
usually
one of them.
Yeah,
and, we're not there.
Well,
and
why didn't he scream about Honduras losing the qualifier, the playoff game? Why didn't he do that?
What do you mean?
Well, he's talking about Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about Panama.
Right.
I know, you know, one of our spots. We didn't make those spots. We didn't even make the playoff spot.
Yeah. Yeah, he might have said that about Honduras too. I don't know, but we happen to be in the World Cup. I think that you were, I get your sentiment. I think you were a little bit unfair to him, though.
Oh, you've just urinated all over my chips with those comments. Thanks for that.
What kind of chips? Are they Doritos? I'll still eat them.
No, like chips. What you call fries.
Oh.
We call chips.
Like fish and chips.
Yep.
So that was your Five Stars, 5 Years Memory of the Week. Keep them coming. We're getting like a nice library now of these things kind of ready to roll out. They're fun, honestly, to go back and listen to.
I think I know the next one we have to do. We have to go back a bit further.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay. I'm curious.
Will I give you a hint?
Yeah.
I have to think of one of his...
Oh,
all right, that's enough.
Now,
it took about half a second. I saw you winding up. Take a deep breath, and I knew exactly.
Like a magic man sprung from Brazil.
Yeah, that will be a fun one.
I come from a land down under.
I'll tell you what, this was a fun podcast. I enjoyed talking about the U.S. women and their 13-0 win, and it's even therapeutic to talk about the U.S. men when they're struggling. I think we've learned that over the past couple years. I don't know. I just enjoy, even when things are bad, not like profoundly bad, like after Trinidad, but even when things are bad, I just enjoy talking U.S. soccer.
It's
I just do.
Good to talk about it.
Yeah.
Me and you would, if we weren't doing a podcast, we'd be sat at a bar.
Yeah, you're so right.
And
though.
We would, and what's weird about us, okay, we have the ability here to play montage music, but we'd do it at a bar as well.
We'd bring in a boombox and just play it over whatever they were already playing in the bar?
No, I would hum the music to you.
Right. That wouldn't be annoying at all. Hey, this was fun. We'll be back early next week after the U.S. women play their next game against Chile and then the men for the Gold Cup. So we'll probably have a couple podcasts next week after each of those games.
What have we done?
Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.